And welcome everyone to another episode of All Things Trek. I'm Oren.
I'm Grace.
I am David.
And joining us as our very special guest, a man who has been known as Dr. Star Trek, or the world's foremost authority on Star Trek, Mr. Larry Nemechek.
I wanted to say, and Jerry Mathers as the Beaver, but okay.
That'll be next week. Don't worry.
It has nothing to do with Trek, but there you go.
So I don't imagine there are that many people listening to us who don't know who you are, Larry, but just in case.
Oh, don't ever assume that. That's always, that was a very nice introduction. Thanks. I'm just a guy that, that had all this stuff in my background and wound up getting to put one of them into play and making most of a career out of it. So, from the old Next Generation Companion, and all my self-published guides before that, to editing the Communicator magazine when it went, and working on the fact files, and the experience, and the world tour, and all those kinds of things, to my column in current Star Trek magazine, and probably most recently, Stellar Cartography, which just came out, and playing McCoy for the first couple of episodes of Star Trek Continues, circling back to my old acting background, so... That's kind of a pastiche. And then my Trekland blog and all things Trekland right now, and my CDs and a whole bunch of stuff, and the Con of Wrath. So you better stop me here before I take the whole hour up. So
you are a busy dude.
And also give a shout out to the Geek Nation tours with Terrace. That's always.
Terrace would shoot. Yeah, and we're supposedly in the prime recruiting season for, you know, sign up season for the tour. So yeah, my friend Terrace and Geek Nation tours and our L.A. to Vegas Trek film site tour is firming up for this summer too. So the second one. So yeah,
firming up, huh? Is that what happens when you go to the planet in Insurrection? Your tours start to firm up.
Yeah.
Hey-o.
Yeah. Definitely feeling. Yeah.
It is a gorge.
So what exactly is up with Geek Nation tours? Because I actually was kind of unfamiliar with it until very recently. So why don't you tell us about it?
Well, Geek Nation tours is a little boutique sidebar that a guy named Terrace Cassidy, who's Canadian, but we forgive him. No, I'm kidding. He's up in Alberta, and when the crash in 08 hit, he has a travel agency, and he was trying to look at a way to survive and came up with this boutique sidebar company to run. But the niche he chose, he called it Geek Nation Tours, and started doing tours to, like, gaming conventions and, I mean, anything you can be a geek about. I mean, he's actually starting to think about some sports things now, but and kid tours.
Whoa,
but he's
departure.
Yeah.
You can totally be a geek about sports. Why not?
Oh, yeah. Well, that we've come full circle from sports getting all the attention to going, it's okay, sports, you can be geeky too. You know, the way we think about it.
We accept you for who you are.
Yeah. But he started off going to, like, gaming cons and medieval castles and military battlefields. They've gone to Europe. And he does, you know, small tours. He has 15, 20, 30, 40 people. And he came up to me a couple years ago at Vegas and said, do you think, hi, I'm Terrace, I do this. Do you think a tour of Trek film sites would be a going thing? And since I've got all the info and research on that, the famous ones and the obscure places, I said, yeah, that's a great idea. And so we did the first one in 2012, and we decided to do every couple of years right now to kind of firm up the popularity, because you have to save up for it a little bit if you're not disposed that way on your income. But it's a hoot, and we decided to link the first one up to the Vegas con. So you come into LA, we have a week of touring around LA in ever widening circles, and then we go to Vegas. And the thing we'll do different this year is we'll go to Vegas a day early, and before the con starts on Thursday, on Wednesday we're going to go out to Valley of Fire, where, you know, Kirk was killed. And
is the bridge still there?
You know what? Funny you should ask. The bridge
Oh my gosh, really?
The bridge is there. They donated it to the park, and they actually use it as a functioning bridge over a creek.
Oh,
I don't know if I trust
gosh,
that bridge.
Really?
And people, yes. And
does it have like a piece of his sweater stuck to the bottom or something still?
Well, they did for 2 weeks, and then some geek ripped it. No, I'm kidding. No, they
geeks.
Yeah, they no, it's there, and they promote it, and they say, this is the bridge from Star Trek Generations, and people take their pictures on it, and, you know, people, if you're really strong, you can pick it up and have it thrown on you, so, you know, for a picture, so, no, I'm kidding.
Only do that if you have a very good insurance policy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, but it's really
part of the ecosystem now.
Yes, yes, it's part of the vibe of the park, and anyway, and where work permitting, provided that Faceoff hasn't stolen him away, Mike Westmore will go out there with us and talk because he was part of the very tiny crew that was out there when Shatner and Patrick and all of them shot those last, you know, those last scenes on top of the buttes and everything. So, but that's like what, that's our new, our biggest new twist this time over the first one. Cause you can go to Geek Nation Tours and, you can go to the Facebook page and go back. I mean, he's got a million tour photo albums there, but you can go back to 2012 and look at the LA to Vegas tour and see. And we went to the Q Continuum and we, you know, the things you think about like Vasquez Rocks, except we have Bobby Clark.
Yeah, going to Vasquez Rocks.
Yes, yes. Nice. You can see Bobby at a con. You can go to Vasquez Rocks yourself, but to be in a group and have Bobby walk around and talk about filming and have it all be live right there in front of you and it all makes sense, that's cool. So that's the kind of thing we try to do. It's some of these things you have no clue about that they're there or that's what it was. Some things are famously obvious, like Vasquez, but we put a twist in where you get a chance to have somebody there. Our welcome dinner is going to be at Cirroc Lofton's restaurant. So,
oh, boy.
Oh, nice.
What kind of food does he serve?
It's kind of a bistro. He and his wife, she has a wine bar, and he has kind of the bistro side, and they have it technically under two different names, but they're all like one little L-shaped building just right south of LAX. It's a perfect place to have our – we didn't do that the first time. We weren't smart. So this time we got wise, and right next to LAX when people come in, bang, it's or not right next to LAX, but down the 405 from LAX. So
right in the general vicinity of LAX.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was
yeah.
one of the cool things about the concept and the way you guys do the tour is you could have gone last year and you could go this year and there's going to be new things. It's going to be a little different. And the group that you go with would be different because it is like a fan community type thing, right? And everybody.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the other thing that, I mean, and Terrace is Canadian. He has clientele. And, of course, you know, the real Trekland is global. So the first trip we had somebody from the U.K., this time he's got a couple of Australians and a couple of Brits so far. But yeah, Australia, Japan, East Asia. If we had enough, I think language is the biggest barrier to Japan, that and the fact that the Trek market is just kind of – it's surprising how Star Trek is not big in Japan. But, I mean, the JJ movies have been trying to work on that and then bring people in. But I worked on a project that was the Fact Files in Japan, so maybe we've done some good. But if we had enough people go, I have a translator standing by to go. We need at least six or eight people to go to justify it. But we Australia, Japan, you know, the States and Canada, the UK and Germany, the big Trek markets like that. But anywhere around the world, and even if you're an American and you're intimidated by going to Vegas, much less if you're a foreigner and you don't speak English or you're a little intimidated about the travel. Whether you're alone or you have somebody with you, it's a great way. The tour is a great way to come in. You can see some of the states and travel. You get to go to the con. You've got a safety blanket, you know. And Terrace is kind of the concierge even while we're at the con. But you walk in the front door at the Rio if you're going to Vegas. You've made friends already, so you bonded with people, and so you don't walk in a stranger. So there's all these kind of like sidebar, you know, layers to it that's kind of. Kind of helpful. And I suppose, you know, Terrace will work on, if you want to come and not go to the con, that's fine. He'll make adjustments on things. If you got your significant other is not a fan and just wants to go around LA, because the places we go to wind up kind of all being mundane, you know, lay tourist places anyway. So you can take your pictures back and show all your normal non-fan friends. I said normal. All your mundane non-fan friends. You know, you can show them the pictures and say, oh, here's where we went. We went to the Santa Monica Pier. We went to Will Rogers Park. And we went to blah, blah, blah.
Never mind that Vulcan in the background.
Yeah. Pay no attention.
What's all these pictures of rocks here, man? Nothing.
Oh, look, they're cute rocks. Okay. Yeah. So that's it. So, you know, there's a lot of different appeals. And like I said, people say, well, I can go to Vasquez Rocks myself. Yeah, but there's something about, well, A, having him with us, but also being in a group. And it's not a big group. We had about, I think, 13 or 14 the first time. So we'll never have more than a small bus full of people. That's kind of the top on it. So everybody should, you know. Look at geeknationtours.com. Go look at the Trek one, and maybe you guys can put the link up or something later, or do something, but or run it
totally.
Somewhere. But So yeah, so and thank you for pointing that out, because I've been bad about remembering to talk about it. There's been so, 2013 was like the year of headlines for me, and it's just been still kind of crazy. And but no, the tour is a lot of cool, and since you've got a, you know, you got a random bunch of people, you never know what's going to happen. So,
well, plus it's always good when you're like looking at anything that has to do with Star Trek or any other kind of franchise that you're into to have other people who you share the same interest, who you know share the same interests.
Oh yeah, well, and when we're on the the bus or the van going around, we have a DVD, you know, we have a screen, and so we get everybody even though you know you've seen Jillian run around and run into the Bird of Prey parked at Golden Gate Park a million times. You get up to Will Rogers Ranch, where I'm a docent, by the way. But we pull up in there and people go, this is like a polo field. What's the big deal? And you put her clip up and you see the gate and the fence and you go, oh, my God, this is it. You have that, oh, my God, this is the blah, blah, blah moment. Oh, my God, this is the Indian village of Miramani. Oh, my God, this is the
just let them walk into the bird.
That has to be helpful.
Yeah, yeah, that's a very helpful thing. Anything to what? To prevent walking into the...
I was just going to say, just let them walk into the Bird of Prey. That'll teach them.
That'll teach them. That's
it. Hire a couple mimes or something to come along and just run into it like they're joggers or something.
A couple of Sharonian mimes. Yeah, that would be black on one side, white on the other.
I always thought that she looked pretty. Non-perturbed.
That's actually why Charon blew itself up, was because the black and white mimes couldn't stand the white on black mimes, and they, yeah.
They just mimed the planet exploding.
Those two you saw.
But
you
in
saw,
space, no one can hear the mime scream.
Right. Those two only develop speech to an excess, you know, when they had 50,000 years to each other. So.
Wow.
You heard it here first.
And this is from Dr. Trek of, you know, Mr. Larian and Nemechek. So, you know.
Canon accepted.
Yeah.
Yes.
Canon unlocked. Yeah.
Well, you,
be
you
careful that canon. It may blow up in your face. Yeah.
One thing I wanted to jump to, and you mentioned your Trekland blog, but I'm so, like, envious and wishing I was, like, winning the lottery, because there's so many cool things that are being shown and put up for auction in the Trekland trunk. You want to tell people about that who may not be familiar?
Oh, yeah.
You get an extra Targ skin today, David.
Ooh, nice.
No, thank you. It's all this stuff. No, and it's such a – it's a little thing, but it's something I meant to do for a while. And when – apart from everything crazy about last year for me with Continues and – the stellar cartography and all that. In the middle of all that, we also moved. My last kid got married. We downsized, and you know, I had a 15-year house, and it's the house I lived in while everything, you know, the 90s and the aughts happened. So, or the late 90s and the aughts happened. So, I had stored all this stuff that I didn't think was that much, and it's all things that's archived to me. I didn't have things so much for collecting. I intentionally did not collect a lot of stuff. I have my little McCoy things, but I really didn't keep a lot of just junk for junk's sake, especially retail things. But I've got a ton of archival things. And when we moved, it was like, this is a lot of bulk. I don't want to give the information away, but I will give away the thing. So I started scanning scripts and scanning set plans and photographing a lot of things and scanning labels. And so, yeah, the Trekland trunk is hopefully my non-cheesy way of putting these things out for auctions and bids, and you know, and the main thing I wanted to do is not be the smarmy used car salesman guy. I didn't want to, on one hand,
used Star Trek paraphernalia salesman.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't want to be popping up in people's Twitter and Facebook going, okay, now we have this sheet of 8 Enterprise E red labels with the in-jokes on them. You know, the bidding starts at, you know, $49 or something. I didn't want to be that. So the Trekland trunk is kind of this – although every once in a while, if it's something especially cool, I will, like, go find a DS9 site or a Voyager site or whatever's apropos, you know. But so the Trekland trunk is my – just, you know, here you go. And you go, you know, go like the page or there's a Twitter feed. And that way, if you're a collector or if you think you might care, then you're there. And if you don't care about collecting, then I'm not in your face, which is what I did not want to, you know, I didn't want to be that way. So I didn't want to be the Sanford and Son of, you know, Trekland or something.
You're not going to, you know, put up messages on the station monitors or anything like that?
No. Come to Quarks. Quarks is fun. Something, something, walk, don't run. Yeah, yeah. No, we
See,
won't
I can
do
make
that.
Any Star Trek reference I want, and he gets it. It's the best. This is like my dream
well,
guest.
If you,
Orin
if you
has found his people.
You will blow a gasket here. We'll get to one that'll be too obscure for me, but on the run like that. That's exactly it. So, no, thanks for asking, and so go sign up. What the other thing that's cool is every once in a while I have some – I thought this was a word I made up a long time ago, and people have been, you know, kind of laughing at me. But I have some kind of googie things, like the first week Voyager was
googie.
On the googie. It's kind of a cross
googie.
Between goofy and there was another word that I had for it. Anyway, it's like cool and potentially valuable, but it's not the. It's like a one-off thing that would never be in a catalog. You would never know about it, and you know, it's kind of goofy, silly, and it may not appeal to everybody. But it Chotsky-ish kind of thing. Like early on, I had – and stuff I put back because I knew it was kind of collectible and cool.
Right.
But like I had the little – in the Paramount cafeteria the first week of Voyager, they had a little on-studio promotion. They had Voyager week at Paramount. And every day in the cafeteria, in the commissary, they had a stupid Voyager-themed menu card put in the little menu card, like little plastic things on the table. So that, you know, it was just, you know, half of the things, nobody knew Voyager yet, so half the things were you know, ripped from DS9 and TNG. But, you know, Leola root soup and stuff like that, you know, but it was really something else. So I had one of those in the original little, you know, I just, at the end of the week, like on Friday, when we were leaving, I just took one. So, and stuck it back. Yeah. So it's really just a piece of paper stuck in your little stand-up, you know, 4x6 plastic thing. So anyway, if you go to, and Trekland Trunk is what the eBay seller is. So if you actually went to that and went back to the history, you could see back 2 months and see what all's been selling. But when I have these googier items, I'll do a live chat on Facebook, a chat bid. And I had to figure out Facebook. I would rather do it in Trekland Trunk, but apparently Facebook doesn't let you do a group chat unless it's your personal page. You can't do it on like a pro page or a fan page or something. So, So I put a thing up and say, okay, gang. So there's, I don't know, 300 or 400 people on the Trekland Trunk Facebook page. So I'll put a thing up and say, okay, we're going to bid for this Voyager week, you know, tabletop menu card from the first week of Voyager. And 8 or 10 people will say, yeah, count me in. And as long as they're personally liked to me, I'll like them, friend them. Then at the time, and I'll just run it for like 6 hours.
You're literally buying friends, Larry.
There you go. I think it's the other way around, but okay.
Although either way, it's a sweetheart deal.
A lot of these people have bought so much stuff, I have to friend them now. In fact, a couple of people that are the biggest buyers were on the tour the first year. I mean, I was like, okay, fine. I don't know where they're putting all this stuff, but their PayPal keeps, you know, not bouncing, so it's cool. No. Shout out to Jeremy and Melody there. Just kidding. But no, so we have goofier things. So like 6 hours, I'll make sure everybody's friended, and then we'll go into a group chat thread on my mundane page and bid for 6 hours. And sometimes things get up to where they're going to go, and then it sits there for three. But it's not quite like people bombing at the last second, like, thank God. And a couple of times it's a little wonky where maybe I'm 5 minutes late getting it started, or I'm working and I look up, oh, it's 10 minutes ago. It should have ended. But you know, and that's almost like role play gaming. There's one of my guys role plays bidding like a Breen. I mean, it's just kind of funky, and people enjoy that better than the eBay thing. So like once a week, we like wrap party invitations and, you know, t-shirt, you know, in-house crew t-shirts, even that are more obscure than just crew t-shirt, you know, stuff like that. So think maybe I've got some labels that there's one that's a little ruined and it's not quite perfect enough to put on eBay, but there's still good stuff on it, so we've done that. So that's a fun thing, and people even get off, like, you know, there's a regular group of 6, 8, 10 people that jump on those, and they all kind of bonk each other, you know, while they're bidding. So, but it's not a closed loop. Everybody's free to, you know, hop in. So
I'm gonna hop in and bid like a packlet. It's like, you know, we are here. We buy things. They make us go.
And yeah, things to make us. Oh, yes. Yeah, yeah. No,
so, okay.
Welcome. You're welcome. Yeah.
So I really want to talk about Star Trek Continues, because Star Trek Continues is really good. For anybody who doesn't know, because I guess you haven't ever listened to us before, Star Trek Continues is a really cool fan series being made by some folks like Vic Mignogna, and we've had him on the show before to talk about it. And of course, Mr. Nemechek for the last two episodes was none other than Dr. McCoy. But I've heard some scurrilous rumors that you aren't going to be Dr. McCoy anymore, and that makes me very sad.
Oh,
what
yeah.
is the
well,
deal,
not,
Larry?
They're not so scurrilous. Well, it was kind of a... Here's the thing. A, I wasn't happy with my McCoy to a certain extent. B...
What?
I'm very proud of it, but I wanted to do more. And I had done some acting brush-up coaching a little bit. But here's the thing. Like, the Con of Wrath, which we haven't talked about, has totally taken a back seat. The Trunk. I have a couple of other things that I really need to get started with Trek. I've started a voiceover career that I'm really working hard on.
Uh-oh.
And as much as I enjoyed it, it was just kind of a mutual thing where it was kind of like I was really cramming for time. And and the first time we shot, it was right when Stellar Cartography, which we haven't talked about here, got going. But that was on a real tight frame. And as much as I, you know, hated not kind of going on with that, right now at this particular time, I just had a lot of life stuff and project stuff that I need to do elsewise, which sounds crazy because as much as I've done over the years, it was wonderful to kind of like break open people's little consciousness and go, oh, look, it's me on camera, you know, instead of on the other side of the camera. So which is, you know, what my college was. I have a master's and a bachelor's in acting and directing. So it was just news and writing was the paycheck. So when I was a kid, I didn't want to starve. I wanted to get on with having a family maybe. So yeah, but I've kind of, like I said, now there's a lot of things that are making sense just for me personally right now, career wise. And there's like eight dominoes. Well, I'm going to mix some metaphors bad here. All these things I'm trying to cram down the pipe all at one time. And either by planning or by accident, they all came up like a lot of them all kind of like exploded last year. So I want McCoy and I want Continues to be the best it can be. And I'm a creative consultant still with the show and still very much working with everybody. And I want to circle around and do some more camera stuff like in a year, 18 months, 2 years or so. So
that would be excellent.
I just got so enmeshed with everybody, and they too. And the other thing is, Chuck Huber had played McCoy in the vignettes that they did, kind of a proof of concept. And on 3 weeks' notice, he couldn't do the first shoot, was delayed, and Dick had been told what a huge McCoy fan I was, and I went in kind of like we had a horrible traffic. I've told these stories before, but I was already in the middle of – I mean, I told him no at first because I was so worried about Stellar Cartography because it was kind of a new – you know, after 10 years of having no Trek nonfiction, this was such a cool idea and on the heels of David Goodman's Federation 150 Years book. And I really wanted it to be just the most ut, and I didn't want anything to interfere with that. I just couldn't believe that all this stuff was happening at the same time. So
I think there's a law of the universe that projects always happen at the same time. You know, you go like 6 months with nothing, and then it's like another.
Yeah, or 6 years.
Everything
or, you know,
happens at once.
Yes, you're slaving along trying to get your own stuff happen, and then things walk in the door from directions that other people have up and ready to go, and you're like, ah!
It's true, when it rains, it pours.
Yes, totally. Even beyond Morton Salt. So,
I understood that joke.
Oh, well, that's Americana. I hope. I hope they haven't done away with it.
No.
So that's the story. But, you know, the Continues family is excellent. That's why Vic wanted me to still be a part, and that's why I wanted to be a part. And people I intend to keep using, you know, Chris is amazing, and he's kind of like a reluctant actor too, but he's got the DNA on his side to play Scotty for his dad.
Nice.
And, you know, Grant coming in is funny. I've got some, you know, and plus, my Trekland, I did a lot of shooting on the side too. We have people that are doing all kinds of documenting that you can see all over the web, you know, on the Kickstarter and everything else. I've got my, you know, I've got Trekland stuff up too. There's a couple of things about me, but I've got more stuff that I haven't put up yet on the blog, video stuff. So, just good, you know, Todd and Kim and Michelle and, who am I leaving out here?
Grant, I think, Mr. Imahara.
Yeah, oh, I thought I'd mentioned Grant. No, Grant's a hoot, and...
The ship.
Wyatt is... Oh, the ship, the sets?
The ship itself.
The
ship
sets itself. Are really good.
Yeah.
Guys, see, that's the thing. The thing I will always take away from the time so far is, because I never say never, but the first, I mean, it was horrible travel time. We got into this crappy shutdown of planes, and we had to take a late plane and drive 3 hours in a rental car to get there to be on halfway on time. But the first morning I walked in on the first episode, and they were shooting in sick bay first, and they had it all lit up, including the little lavender side lights over the bio beds. And I walked in, and it was amazing, and I had no clue. I was like, do I need to bring props? Do they have surgery props? And they had everything there. It was beautiful, working scanner, and a little Leonard McCoy MD sign out front of the front door. And I always had to go by. And I just started. I would just like, oh.
Amazing.
The fan, you know, after all these years and being jaded and cynical and seeing, you know, knowing where bodies are buried and crap like that, to be able to have a pure little fanboy moment was just wonderful. Even though that was the hardest fun I've had in ages, it really got a lot of old acting muscles out and going again, and realized I needed to go to the gym a little more. But
the acting gym,
yeah, it's acting gym. And
oh dear.
And but you know, all of that was just amazing. But and our crew and background people and the professionalism of the, I mean, you're on set and it's a sound speed marker rolling. Hold for camera, hold for lighting, okay. You know, the stage protocol and the stage discipline was great. But not to say that it wasn't one big happy family. And you've probably seen the pictures of everybody going to eat every night there in Kingsland and the four or five places that knew we were coming and, you know, the motels that gave us a rate and the stuff that just, oh, the Star Trek people are in town filming again. You know, it's a googie thing. So it's – I'm going to go – they're about to shoot the third episode. I'm going to go – I think I'm all but – I didn't think I was going to be able to, but I'm all but set to go for 3 or 4 days and see everybody and actually have a Rathacon event there if I can finish getting the – I shouldn't talk about it before the details are finalized, but hopefully that will all happen. So like I do at cons, only do it there for the local clubs because we didn't have time the last time to do it. So
Well, you did a fantastic job on Star Trek Continues. Like, the first two episodes were really, really good. And I'm not going to spoil anything about the plot because I know a lot of people probably haven't seen it yet. But
oh, I hope. We shouldn't spoil too much. No, thank you for
saying
that.
We were glad to see you, though. We'll be sad to see you go.
Oh, well, thank you. No, and the second one, they're really different vibes. The first one's a sequel, technically. The second one isn't, although the sequel really stands on its own. I don't think you really even had to see the first one. Maybe some of the layers. Like with some of the references back to the first show, but it's really kind of in the moment of what's going on with that one. But it's kind of a traditional show. And the second one was really kind of a power packer, but it's so guest star centric. There's so many guest roles in it that the regular crew are kind of like, you know, not front and center on that one. But that's fine. It's a different show, and it's so dynamic, and it's such a hoot, and it uses so much green makeup. Oop, I didn't say that. That, so they're both, and I think people, it was good to show different, you know, that it's not going to be, because people were saying, okay, please don't have every show be a sequel after the first one, and it was like, haha, it's not. So the third one's all set, obviously, it's locked and pretty much ready to shoot, but the fourth show has not been picked yet. There's plenty of ideas floating around, and it probably won't shoot until October again, because it's in Kingsland, Georgia, and nobody wants to be there in summer. So,
Now, when are you going to write an episode? That's my question.
Well, you know, for 20 years or so, that's kind of scary. For 10, 15 years, and I told Dave Rossi this when they were almost going to do that animated show for StarTrek.com and then got the rug yanked out from under them when that got shut down.
Ouch.
But I've wanted to do, you know, the first visit to Teller Prime and do a Tellarite show. But I don't have a story. I just have the idea, so.
What would you like to do with that, if you could?
Well, that's what I just, like I'm saying, I don't really have a story, but I just want it to be the first look at Tellarite society and Tellarite, you know, give them their due. We finally started getting some of the Andorians in Enterprise, and I, you know, I guess I'm an underdog guy. I became a McCoy fan because I thought Kirk and Spock were getting all the attention, and Scotty and McCoy were just as good, and, you know, even with 60s billing. style. And I always thought the, you know, I was always mad the Andorians and Tellarites didn't get more attention as the years went by. And finally the Andorians did. So now it's up to the Tellarites. So.
Well, I feel like since we know Tellarites are into arguing, like that's a thing that's been established, we should
no,
have
they're
a story.
Not.
Why would you say that, Orin?
I disagree.
We should have a story where McCoy is, through some sort of shenanigans, forced to become debate captain of a Tellarite debate team.
Oh my god!
Because I would watch
amazing.
That.
He would out-argue the Tellarites, and it would be beautiful.
No, you will not get the last word, human.
Yeah, see?
Now, okay, so I also want you to talk about the
con
of Wrath.
You should have Journey to Babel there. I hope some people...
Yeah.
I hope you got that.
That's a very good episode. Journey to Babel is one of my favorite TOS episodes.
It's one of my favorite, too, so...
But I want you to talk about the Con of Wrath, because that is a story that I'm only vaguely familiar with, and I would love to hear more about it.
Oh, my God. How did that... I mean, I feel like I've been blabbing about this for 2 years. How did that happen? Okay.
Blab to us now.
Blab to you. The Con of Wrath, A, was a real-life event. B, not my title, although tons of everything from sitcoms to whatever have used the Wrath of Con or written the Con of Wrath and had it be C-O-N or K-A-H-N. But it was a real-life event, and it was also the first... real big fan thing I got to go to when I was a kid or driving. But it was, you know, if we put some context here, just because we've got so many of you newbies, like the first big, you know, media fandom and franchises and all that didn't really exist before Star Trek. There'd been science fiction cons, had been lit cons and art, and we'd had fanzines, you know, since the first world cons and fanzines and all that since the 30s. Well and good. And, you know, the Hugos introduced that were voted on at the Worldcons, had introduced a dramatic presentation thing probably by the 50s. So some of the really classic sci-fi movies would be among the nominees and maybe – but there'd be some years where there wouldn't be – if they were, like, crappy, if we had bug-eyed monster B-movies and that was all – it wasn't a good year. There'd be no – and nobody even thought about TV until maybe the Twilight Zone. So some years there wouldn't even be a dramatic presentation nominee. And of course, the original series Star Trek got in and was nominated two or three times. The only one and the one good year, there were like four running against each other, and the one that won was City on the Edge, I think. I could be wrong. It could have been Menagerie. But
certainly
nominated.
Deserved to win.
Yeah, nominated anyway. But, so media fandom and media, the first Star Trek convention, I mean, we have media fandom because of Star Trek. If you stop and think about it, you know, we had rock bands and we had like individual movie star celebrities kind of thing. You know, the Monkees had a big letter writing campaign to save their show, which didn't work. But apart from that, you know, the Star Trek letter writing campaign was kind of amazing. But there really, media fandom did not exist until that first Star Trek convention, the New York cons in the 70s that Joni Winston wrote about and the rest of the original committee. And then after two or three years of that, then bang, Chicago, LA, Bijo Trimble was doing hers in LA. And then it was off and running. And then three or four years later, bang, Star Wars hit. And, you know, there would be Star Trek or Star Wars kind of wannabe conventions, except the Star Wars actors wouldn't do them because they were all trying to build their careers. But then media fandom was off and running. And it really started with the Star Trek era. So 73 was the first Trek Con. Not until 82, so not even 10 years. So the Wrath of Khan comes out in June. A year before that, a guy in Houston had the idea to have this, not just a convention, Q&A, autograph signing, you know, thing, but to have a show, have like a rock, you know, arena convention. And he had this crazy idea to have this big show in their arena where the Houston Rockets played. And have an orchestra, let Nichelle sing live, have the whole cast, Walter do a play that they all perform in, you know, have a laser show, have this really huge, dream big, out of the box kind of thing. And
nothing
again,
possibly go wrong.
Goodness no.
Well, it was all guys that had a production or AV, you know, it was the AV club type guys. But a healthy mix of people that had, they'd been doing conventions and all that. You know, it was still the Wild West kind of convention. Not that it's still not in a way, but you know, one, no bloody A, B, C, or D, you know, one storied cast who had just, you know, the motion picture had come out. It was kind of lukewarm. People wanted more. They were thrilled to have a movie after 10 years. 'Cause that was the whole point of Star Trek fandom in the beginning or half of it was to have a return, you know, before the world took it seriously. Before the world even thought about, oh, this is a money machine I can make a buck off of. Even before you had that attitude, it was just getting it back on. So motion picture, and then Wrath of Khan is like, boom, everybody's like, now that's what I'm talking about. And in the middle of that, 2 weeks after Wrath of Khan opens, this show, which according to Ticketron and everything legitimate about it, was going to be a sellout, 3 shows, 18,000 seats. Cast arrives from L.A., everybody but Nimoy, who also had a change of heart at the last minute, and they wouldn't let him come, which is another crazy story.
Rude.
Weird.
People, you know, fans, dealers, the local crew, the L.A. actors, including Harb Bennett and Kirstie Alley and Merritt Buttrick, everybody's there in and Mark Leonard, everybody's there in town, and yeah, the bottom line is it did not quite go the way they thought it would go. And I was there, along with a few other 100 people, not thousands.
Oh dear.
Hundreds. Oh dear. So, you know, we got through the weekend and I took pictures and I was mad because I didn't get to see D. Kelly up close. And it was like every time I was supposed to see him at a convention, I had mono one time. This time it fell apart, it melted down, and I didn't see him close up. It was like, not, wasn't until 4 or 5 years later, finally went by and I did. And all that was all good. But, you know, I took the pictures, I stuck them away, I went on with life. So 2 years ago, there was like one story in Starlog magazine, and that's all I know. So a couple years ago, I'm at the Dead Dog party for SoonerCon, my back home peeps convention, and I hear a guy talking across the room about the show. There was an actual convention that happened every year called HoustonCon. It was your regular convention. And that happened. But this thing that they had done in the Houston Rockets arena at the summit was called the Ultimate Fantasy, because it was the first time anybody had tried to dream a show this big with all the cast together like that. It was a first-time thing, which today sounds like a porn movie. In fact, it sounds like an 80s porn movie.
And, yeah, a
little bit. Episode of the original series.
Yeah. But by the end of the weekend, people were calling it the ultimate fiasco, the ultimate fallacy, the ultimate fuck up, the, you know. And one girl who we're going to get on camera was walking along, and she, you know, and again, remember, this is fresh. This is like 2 weeks after the Wrath of Khan opened. So everybody's still very much like high on, and still going to the theater and seeing it live. And they're walking along, and some girl said, who talked to me later, said, oh my God, this is called, we should call this the Con of Wrath. And they all died laughing, went back, talked to a couple of the dealers that were doing buttons. And before the weekend was out, people were doing buttons that said, I survived the Con of Wrath, you know, Con of Wrath survivor.
Wow.
And because it was still fresh and hot and new. And A, that's where, and we'd heard that. So A, that's where my title comes from. I didn't make it up. It's too good not to use. And B, I've had a couple of people give me their original I Survived the Con of Wrath, which are on the site, which are, you know, in the blog at times. But in fact, one of the dealers, we talked to him. He's not like an investment banker and is very well off. But he got out his little, you know, minute maker, button maker, and made me a fresh Con of Wrath, I Survived the Con of Wrath button on camera. It was just a hoot. So yeah, so this guy I met after this after party a couple years ago, turns out he was the tech director for the stage. And it just this flood of memories back. And I knew I had my pictures. And the more he talked, I thought, this has got to be preserved. There's a generation that's going to have no clue about this as an event. And as it's just a piece of its time. You know, it was like a golden time. It was a simpler time, a gentler time. And the more I thought about it, it was like, no, Larry, don't. This is not like go interview them on audio. It's the aughts. It's the teens. You need to, everything is on video. Nothing is any good unless it's on camera. And
then
I thought,
it's the future now.
It's the future now. Put it on screen, Lieutenant. And I thought, this is the thing that I've been trying to do for 10 years to get, not just be a word guy, but be a media guy. And every time I step into something, it would not go, including the Star Trek tour, which I was working with the PR people for, and then it changed owners and split in two pieces and all that, and that went away. So I did a real quick math and thought, okay, well, Leonard and Walter and Walter and George and Harb Bennett, I bet they would talk on camera at least about it. And I found out all the Houston people but one were still there. And I just thought, I think this is doable. And when Harv and Walter said, yes, in fact, I have stories that need to be preserved, I was like, oh my God, okay, we're going to do this. And it was simple. I could do it on a simple scale and just kind of go along, you know, on a very small budget and just get the stories and then fluff it up at the end. And I had just been around Roger Nygaard, who worked on the first two Trekkies documentaries and had done his own documentary that was not Trek. And I had just seen kind of how people could go along and do an easygoing, you know, production, this kind of a model. So that's what I jumped into doing. I thought about doing a I have a PayPal donation page at ConorFrath.com, but I thought about doing a Kickstarter. I held off just because you either do a Kickstarter right or you don't do it at all, because the worst thing is to not make your goal. And I've got the pieces of the video I'm still going to use, but we've just been going along, and I've got people interested in putting money in and being producers. So I'm just kind of waiting and seeing, because it'll be a small budget thing, but I'm kind of focusing in now on having it come out in 2016 on the 50th anniversary year. So we've kind of got an input. I've probably got about half the people or 5/8 of the people interviewed that I want to do, but there's still some I need to get. Michelle, I'd love to get Bill and Leonard. So I'll work on, I'd like to work on them, but there's a few more. We have the crew in Houston all handled, and we're going to the original sites where this happened. And we've got some contemporary footage from the weekend and news tape and stuff, because news crews showed up because kids were – the hotel, apart from the show, the hotel had overbooked and had four main events going with crowds, groups attached with rooms, and decided they would relieve their stress by kicking out the Trekkie kids. And when they got a whiff of the thing bankrupting, they thought, oh, we'll jump on them. And news cameras got called, and Harb Bennett is calling his friends in L.A. to tell them to network people to get their local news crews off of this thing and not have it. Because they were worried about it being a PR disaster for Paramount and Star Trek. And, it was like all these wrinkles. And Harv talks about that. And it's just, it's like people – it's all these circles of people – had their stories and also did what they could to, here's the amazing thing, keep it going. I mean, there have been other cons that blew up, that melted down, and that maybe they would go on for a few hours and people would make a go of it. But this thing went on all weekend, and the people at the arena, the actors, did all three shows, even though there's like 800 people in the audience or 1,000 people in this big echoey chamber. So, and so from there we talk about how, would this have happened today? Would a cast of a franchise show do this? If you'd only had cell phones, they could talk back and forth between them. It's like, if what would social media have done on the first day? Would they have still had Nimoy come in? And now you'd go, look who walked out. Back then they're like, we had the programs printed and the publicity was done. But they were going to do show after this huge thing made all this money. Supposedly they were going to do it in New York and L.A. and Vegas and Chicago, and Ricardo Montalban and Nimoy were going to jump into those shows. They were going to work in things for them. So it's just a thing of its piece. And we even talk about, I've gotten off on tangents about one of the kids is, and these are all kids in their 20s who are now in their 50s. So some of them have stayed in fandom. Some of them haven't. One of them, I talked to their mother, what it was like to watch. One of their group died recently, and his sister, who had not really known this group, has gotten to know them, and she's kind of our den mother, and she cooks for everybody when we're in Houston.
Aww.
So it's really become this interesting thing. And again, the Connor, it took a back seat last year. I had so much going on with Continues and Stellar Cartography. Not that I can't multitask, but we had one really good, like a 5-day, 7-day shoot back in Oklahoma, Texas. But
that explains that weird scene in the last episode of Continues where McCoy is having a production meeting for a documentary. I didn't quite understand that, but now it all.
Well,
makes sense.
I was trying to, I just.
I thought it was representative of something. I didn't get it though.
It's metaphorical. It's metaphorical. You think he's having a medical department staff meeting, and yeah.
They're making a statement. You see.
I couldn't read the text on all those buttons they were wearing, but I see. I knew they weren't Itics, but you guys are funny. No, we were trying to overlap there. It was cross promotion. Yeah.
Well, you've mentioned it a few times, and before we get too far into, too tight on time, I do want to have you jump onto Stellar Cartography, because it's something that I think just looks amazing.
The thing you keep coming back to.
I hope everybody keeps coming back to. Well, I'd love to take the total credit for it. I mean, eventually, but the last 10, if you're a fan, whether you got it fresh and you were a kid, or whether you see them now and you go, my God, I mean, we've been barely lucky to have reference books. I mean, I used to talk about Star Trek nonfiction. People thought it was crazy. It's like, isn't it all made up? You know, but I mean nonfiction as opposed to the novels. And the novels have always gone strong. It's, I don't say it's easy to write a book, but it's easy to package and produce the novels. And we've got so many great authors who use canon and keep pumping them out and are getting more and more creative. And, you know, a lot of them are good friends of mine, Kevin and Dayton and David Mack and Keith and I'm leaving people out, David George, some of the newer ones I don't know personally, Christy Golden. But, you know, those are always kind of a given, even though they've pulled back on the number and the frequency since the fallow time, you know, the last few years. But nonfiction has taken such a hit. We've barely been able to do, like, reference books and guidebooks through the aughts after, you know, so many golden years. And I think sometimes some of the ideas for them were a little misguided. Because I think fans, on one hand, fans want basic stuff on the shelf, damn it, you know, like My Companion and like the Encyclopedia. And in the early days, you know, the original Blueprints and the Tech Manual and Bijou's. People just want the damn book they can go grab. And even with things on, you know, online and digital, sometimes you have to fire up your app or whatever. Sometimes you just want to be able to go get the book and have it in your lap while you're watching a show and go bang there. Page 247, bang, point to it. It's there. And then the out-of-the-box stuff like Blueprints and some of that stuff has, you know, that's dried up. And Pocket got, because of budgets and overhead, got very conservative with stuff over the years. So a couple things have happened. They've opened up the nonfiction license now so that it doesn't have to go through Pocket Books or somebody else can be an originator. They can be an imprint on it. But people, there have been things come along where people have had the ability to do that. And this book packager called Becker Mayer, who's up in Seattle, they've been doing this with franchises and with not. I mean, they've been doing all kinds of out-of-the-box things. And like they did David Goodman's Federation First 150 Years book last year that came on the pedestal. They'd done some Star Wars things that were very cool, that a Jedi and a Sith thing that both kind of came in really cool packaging where you like opened up this little like a granite thing and the book was buried inside kind of that was the impression it was supposed
that's
to be
nice.
Yeah, so
that sounds like something we'd make here in Seattle.
You're in Seattle. See, I lost track of that. Okay, you're in Seattle. Well, I'm gonna come to Emerald City. You have to
come. Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, we have
I have
to
another
do
reason
some...
to go to Emerald City Comic-Con. Yeah.
There you go.
Awesome. We gotta meet up or something.
I have two panels, and I'm going to do a Wrathicon fundraiser again in Seattle. I have a little Seattle – I didn't realize I knew so many people, either old people I knew from before – or excuse me, longtime friends I knew from before, or people
nice
that
–
I'd see them at Vegas, and then I'm in Seattle. I go, wow, you get to a lot of cons. They're like, no, I live here. Oh, okay. But
Seattle is a hip happening town. Like
it
that,
is.
So,
you guys have like a con every 47 minutes. It's like of some
not
kind.
Not gonna lie, it's pretty sweet.
It's kind of like they're taking down the Emerald City ones and putting up the next anime con banners. I'm like, wow, okay, Seattle. But Star Cartography. So there's this pent up demand, I think, even though we're not having a TV show every week, there's so many cool things, and there's a generation that never got to get it for Christmas and open it up fresh the first year it came out, like we got to do with like the Blueprints and the Tech Manual and the Medical Reference. And
just real quick, in a recent interview, I think you said that at one point there
research?
Was
wow.
a movement to, or not a movement, but like there's from the fans and also from you know, inside the industry type people, that there's a push or demand or desire to get the encyclopedia an updated version of it. And at some point, somebody either at CBS or at the books plate, they said like, though, we don't think there's enough interest in it. And I was like, how could you think there's not interest
well,
in it?
Yeah. Well, real quick, just to, you're kind of there. What I'm talking about there is like the last 5-10 years.
Okay.
With the world, this is. I used to be really depressed because we didn't have Star Trek in production. I was really down about it's a fallow time, it's going to be boring, we're going to be eating each other because there's nothing to talk about, which is silly because people are making fan films, people are doing, you know, the gaming, STO is, you know, people are writing still. People are finding ways to express their fan passion, you know, and damn it, if CBS Paramount won't give us new stuff, even if... And all the controversy, yay and nay, over the JJ movies. But even if the entire world loved the JJ movies, everybody uniformly, and couldn't wait for the next one. And a lot of people do. I'm not going down there, but I'm just saying, it's a movie. And I was saying this in 08 and 09, and people thought I was poo-pooing the movies before they ever came out. All I was trying to say was, it's a movie. It's 2 hours every two or three or 4 years. And it's not like having a series. And eventually people woke up to that and thought, oh my God, I have to wait 3-4 years to wait for another 2 hours of Trek. Jesus Christ, bring back the TV shows. Because, you know, and Star Trek was created to be a TV show. The movies have always been about being icing on the cake. So in the vacuum, people are making their own Trek, damn it. You know, it's like, I want more. Well, if I have to make my own, I'll do it. So that said, people wanting more, I was really curious to see for a long time, like I talked about the books. There was kind of an at the same time that happened, we've had the digital revolution, we have the online revolution, we've had social media the last 10 years or so, and it's changed everything. And I think it's still like kind of washing over us. And so one of the things that, rather than being a boring time for me and kind of what I've figured out I can do at Trekland, besides tell the same old boring moldy oldie stories over and over again, which I also learned, everything old is new again, because
we like hearing them.
People. That's what I'm saying. It was like another light bulb. It was like, oh my God, there are people that we've got so many new fans coming in. People don't know this shit. So, excuse me, these wonderful stories and insights. So that's one thing. But the other thing is like what all the newness is doing to everybody. And that's why when I'm at a con, I'll do like a show of hands, and we'll do kind of like a real quick survey just to kind of see where the room is. Like, what was your – when did you come into the Star Trek family, and what's your favorite, and, you know, some things like that. So that's one of the things. And I think one of the old memes from 10 years ago was about book publishing, was about, A, everybody – this thing that took hold – was, oh, everything's online anyway. Nobody buys books anymore or reads books. It's all online. Everybody knows all this stuff already. You're just repeating everything. So that kind of was, you know, in place. And so between things being digital media and apps, and between going, no, people are dying for new stuff. When I brought that topic up, it's going away. It's just a matter now of people, decision makers aren't of that ilk anymore. And now it's a matter of finding the best way, you know, the right business model to get things to people. Because, you know, the exciting thing and the frustrating thing is, like, online, as you guys know, everybody's still trying to figure out the right way to do this. What's the business model?
Bit.
You know, it's like, it's not like
it's
everybody
confusing.
Wants to
be, yeah.
It's like, and every 2-3 years, there's new software, there's a new thing. I mean, when Dan and I, when the official fan club, when Decipher, almost 99% went under and the thing imploded. And Dan and I on our own were trying to buy back the official fan club license and have Communicator keep going. We were talking about, well, it'll obviously by now, 2005, 6, 7, be mostly online and paper will be greatly diminished. And we were looking at having to build this huge site and within 2 or 3 to do all these functions. And within 2 or 3 years, 3/4 of what we talked about existed as off the shelf, you know, was Twitter and Facebook and you know, blog software and Pinterest and whatever. You know, it's like within just 4 or 5 years there, everything changed and you could just have pulled those things off and used it. So those things have all been happening so fast. It's all happened without even a show being on the air. 2005 is like a million years ago. And the last year of Enterprise was the year they shot in digital and didn't have VHS tape dailies stacking up in the mailboxes of the writers. I mean, it was just, it's like so much change has happened so fast. The next show, when it happens, it'll be amazing to watch how it's done and how it will exist in, I mean, you know, the internet came along halfway through the Berman era. And he never, you know, it was like a late thing. People that grew up in the 70s and 80s in the industry didn't know what to, you know, the internet was an enemy that, you know, they're always invading and spoiling stuff and giving our secrets away. And the youngest
pirate in our stuff.
Yeah. And if you go back, you know, Ron Moore, bless his heart, used to do that AOL chat. And yep, it was like revolutionary.
Oh, man. Yeah.
It was like a revolution. I mean, it was like, my God, it's like access and it's a fan outreach. And that was so, you know, I could go on all this about that. I don't want to go on forever, but so much stuff is happening and it's still happening. So,
and you definitely believe that we will have another Star Trek series in the future?
Well, let me say this. In the town...
Say it, say it.
The town that, you know, is bringing back, you know, looks at things like... In the town that has such a great reservoir of new creative energy and takes things like, you know, Bewitched and brings it back but doesn't do Bewitched, or it has I Dream of Jeannie and doesn't do I Dream of Jeannie. You know, they want to redo something and then not redo it. They make it some bastardized thing that fails. In a town that is so, you know, bereft of creative ideas, you're sitting there with this billion-dollar franchise and you're not going to bring it back at some point? And I think, if nothing else, aside from having to let these 3, 4, 6, 9, 10, 12 years go by, whether a TV series gets to overlap the last one or two JJ movies or not, people get it now. You know what I mean? People get it.
Yeah. And I'm picking up what you're putting down.
And here's another part of the equation. Netflix and all the original content providers,
yep.
You know, Netflix shows being nominated for Emmys, House of Cards, Orange is the New Black, you know, Arrested Development got
shows.
Out of the, yeah, Arrested Development got
it
all
It is definitely
the,
changing the formatting, yeah.
Yes,
that,
got all
There's
the
definite
attention.
Possibility with that.
But, you know, if that's what's exploding people's brains now. So the piece of, here's another piece of advice I've been passing along I want to leave with you guys and your audience. Somebody told me that Netflix has made noises about doing a Star Trek show, but CBS is not having anything to do with it. So far, you know, never say never. But CBS, Les Moonves, Mr. I hate, you know, supposed I hate science fiction, Mr. Moonves, I love things that make a profit, couldn't help but point out to stockholders on their quarterly phone call that of all their their properties on Netflix, which, you know, they get pennies for, you know, showing, anybody that has anybody that owns something that Netflix is showing is getting a piece of it, you know, obviously. Of all the stuff that's supposedly hot on Netflix, like that would make sense, what's the number one thing of that CBS owns that's on Netflix that's their number one viewer? You know,
I'm
the most
take a
number
wild
one show.
Guess here and say that it might have something to do with Star Trek.
NCIS? Nope. Big Bang Theory? Nope. Ding, you've already guessed it. Right. So he mentioned that. So it's Star Trek, and the enduring quality and popularity of Star Trek is on CBS's radar. It's on Netflix's radar. We live in such a goofy world. Who knows? Now, the worst thing is there's so much inertia now because no one is in charge. There's nobody to run out. You know, even JJ and Bad Robot have not dipped their toe in the water about TV. Now it's kind of come out why. And I knew that, but I knew it from the perspective of frustration about doing product. I didn't know it from – but it makes total sense now. He was basically wanting to create a new Lucasfilm, and so now he's going over where I guess he can kind of do that and start – not giving up on Trek, but he's going where he thinks the whole merchandise, you know, canon sidebar property empire is going to be more to his liking or more what he wanted to do.
No, yeah. We'll see what happens with that.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, so they didn't jump in to be the new Gene Roddenberry or the new Rick Berman, you know, controlling, you know, the go-to guy running, fronting the empire. They backed out of that. So the TV thing is just sitting there begging. Now, I don't think maybe Bob Orsi is writing the next movie script with two new writers. He's not teaming up with his company partner, who he's always written with. I mean, they didn't split up. They're still together. He's just writing the Trek movie with two other guys. So there's room for independent thought here. And I think out of the committee, out of the Supreme Court, they love to call themselves, I think, you know, Bob Orsi is the most tried and true wash and dried fan who will also reach out. And do, you know, he did the long form interview with Mission Log Pod that Roddenberry does that my friend John can do. So he's not averse, and you know, I think sometimes the committee group approach has colored, in fact, even beyond Bad Robot and JJ, the whole idea that these Trek movies, and I'm jumping over, the Trek movies being a tentpole blockbuster, if Paramount's not going to lose face among the other studios and their blockbusters, they've got to be the worldwide global box office formula. And again, the reason, like it or love it, the reason the last two movies have been increasingly what they are is for the audience in China and Thailand and wherever in the world, not so much us. We're like 20% of the box office on them, which is another reason I say, fine, that's the way that is, great. Another reason why we need Trek back on TV so we can make it for the home audience. You know, not, I'm not trying to be xenophobic here. I'm just saying the audience that cares about it lives in the States and Canada and the UK and Germany. You know, the old fans that have been around for 20, 30 years that know what it is, let's make it for them and not worry about what a theater model, you know, a movie cinema model is for box office. And, you know,
yeah, you don't necessarily want to diffuse the quality of your show by trying to make it accessible to everyone through all of their various cultural lenses.
Yeah, and I don't mean cultural so much as the you know, whether it's true or not, the thing they the formula for global franchise blockbuster is, you know, car crashes and explosions and huge effects and, you know, having a diverse, nothing wrong with having a diverse cast. But another thing was, I think you saw, I saw the marketing, and I love Uhura, and I love Zoe Saldana, but when I saw the marketing, you know, they would do like, if you had room for three slots in your marketing, it would be like Kirk and Spock and Uhura on Into Darkness. And I'm like, whoa, wait a minute, what's happened to McCoy? I would say that. But then I went, oh, I see what they're doing. They want a female. They're thinking in 2013 terms, not 1966, 67 terms. They're like, we need a female. We need someone of color. You know, somebody, at least something in there. They're totally thinking marketing-wise and worldwide. And not that those aren't, you know, things to think about. And then not that I'm against bolstering Uhura's character, to be totally specific. But to demote McCoy in that feel was not a good thing. And, McCoy's role did suffer a little bit. And Carl Urban does such a bang-up job with that in a well-cast movie.
He is a very good McCoy.
Oh, yeah.
Word.
Yeah. So anyway, so I got off on a ramble there. I'm sorry, David.
Well, we're spinning off of the stellar cartography, and when you mentioned that they're opening up more of the non-fiction.
So
there's a starting point. Yeah.
Yeah. So the thing is, it's like likes on YouTube or Facebook or whatever, views on YouTube. When we were pre-selling it, I was trying to push the idea of the more people pre-ordered, the more signal it would be. It's almost like a social media ticker. Send a signal. On my book, on anything, on the Abrams Publishing did the 365 books that Paul and Terry worked on.
Well, I just recently picked up the Haynes Manual for the Bird of Prey. That was something that I was happy to see.
Yeah, the Haynes Manuals, which I leave out of the equation sometimes. But no, all of those things are great, and they're not just – of course, right now we don't have anything to do just a reference guide to. But all of those are great out-of-the-box things. There's been a pent-up demand the last 10 years, and we're just now starting to get back to it. And some of them are – the Haynes manuals are wonderful and beautiful, and they fill a lot of canon in that's not technically on screen. They're gap fillers too, as I call them. But even you can get even more out-of-the-box kind of like stellar cartography and far afield and have – you know, be cool and not have it be just a book or have it be a little
presentation
– Yeah.
Well, like you said, for the Klingon culture and lore, they definitely added more to that, and you get to see specs of the ship and all that. But when it really comes down to it, it's a book, and I love it, but it's a book. What I loved about Stellar Cartography is it's more than just, you know, a one book. There's so much more to it, and it adds to the fabric of Trek in such a larger way than just here's a look at the Enterprise or here's a look at the Bird of Prey or whatever.
Oh, sing it, warrior. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
No,
I know. So it's out. Sorry, it's not just Chris. I'll just say real quick, it wasn't just out for Christmas. It's still out there going along at $47.99, or you can get some from me if I'm at a con. Yeah, yeah. But I know we're over time a little bit, and I'm sorry I got to rambling there. I think
that's fine.
I started to say that'll cover a lot of sins. But I got off on the Netflix tangent a little bit there. What I wanted to come back and say in the same echo of non-Trek nonfiction, go out and buy it, is I had somebody just bluntly say, you want to affect the future of Trek? Here's one way you might do it. Watch Trek on Netflix. Go buy the Blu-rays. Enjoy the everything. But turn your Netflix ticker on. Set it up. Pick a show. Pick your favorite series and just let it go. Don't even watch. If you don't want to watch it 24/7, put it on in the back room. Put it on, turn the sound down. Put it on while you're, ironing clothes, if anybody still does that, or you're making dinner or whatever. Have it going and let the ticker run because it's sending a message. It's adding up. It's sending a message to Netflix. It's sending messages to CBS. I mean, and I know Star Trek is on the Google Google Prime, Google Plus. I keep mixing up what it's called. There's other video platforms that are out there too. But Netflix is like the biggest and the first and the one you can make an impression on. So add to the biggest pile. So, you know, it sounds crazy, but do that and let it go on autopilot and just let the meter run. And it can't hurt. So into that soapbox.
That is a really cool idea. And I know you have to get going, but I hope you have time for one more question, because I know Grace had one that she wanted to ask.
Oh, yeah.
Well, as someone who's been running the Trekland trunk, what's one like specific item that you have really wanted to see in your collection? Is there anything that's been like your white whale through the years of collecting and archiving and what have you?
Wow.
Yeah, it's a weird question, but I was
curious.
No,
it's a great question. I know there's something out there.
Sword of Kalis, it's just out there somewhere.
It's just out there somewhere.
You know it is. It has to be.
I've always meant to, and I thought I was going to be on a track to do it, and now it's obviously not quite as urgent, but I've just wanted to replace my old McCoy original series dress uniform that I had, but that's not an original artifact or anything. Wow.
Just another to go along
just
with
anything
that.
You'd like to get your hands on or something like, yeah.
Yeah. Wow. You've as Marina would say, you've gobsmacked me with that one.
Well, the thing I've also wondered to go along with that is you are, you know, releasing and letting go of so many rare and one of a kind and hard to find. How much of it are you keeping to yourself? Like you're just not going to put this up on eBay or let it go?
Well, anything I've eBayed or whatever, I've either scanned it or photographed it, or it's something that's, you know, I've kept it for the record, so I have it to talk about. You know, either as an article, or I either have the information, like if it's a script or a set plan, I've got it to use in a practical way, or it's photos to remember, oh, here's the bobbleheads that the Experience sold in their retail store or something, you know, goofy. So anything like that, I still have it. I just don't have the thing, which is what I'm after. But no, there's four or five people. I have a bottle. People have seen the Picard, the Chateau Picard wine from Nemesis. But before that, I have a bottle that Alan Sims, the prop master, gave me of Chateau Labar, which was the wine they used in Best of Both Worlds, in Family, and then in the episode First Contact, when he actually is back with Robert and Renee and Marie, and they have a bottle of wine there at their dinner. And it's a different label. It's in color, and it says Chateau Labar. And then it's the bottle, the same label that when he and I'm pulling it out here, Chancellor Durkin in First Contact, he opens a bottle of wine that had been sitting on his shelf since it was that same season, and they went back. You know, I think Ron Moore wrote the episode, went back to his show Family, but they go and he says, "Yes, this is a bottle of wine from my family's vineyards back on my home planet," and that's their little bonding moment. I have a full bottle, a corked bottle of Chateau Labar wine, which Paramount would love to license, but there is a real Chateau Labar winery in France.
Nice.
And they can't get the name. But I have that. I have the little octagon, shiny, goofy wall decor thing from Trials and Tribulations that was on the wall. The tape rip. I mean, somebody gave it to me, and it's like, this was screen used, and it's Trials and Tribs. I'm going to hang on to it. And I have a couple of things. I had somebody found me a original series microtape, you know, the little plywood things that look like 3.5-inch floppies.
Oh,
From the original series that was found when they came back in the 80s. And I had it on set with me for the first Trekker. If you watch the briefing room scene in Pilgrim of Eternity on Star Trek Continues, the orange microtape in my hand is an actual 60s microtape.
Oh, nice.
Just a little thing. But I've got a few little things like that that there's no way I'm going to hang on. I mean, I'll hang on to them. I have the actual goofy seed pod cone that Mike Okuda scanned to be the Klingon virus in Prophecy, which was the script that came out of the story that I sold. He gave me the actual little seed pod cone It looks very scary as a virus. And made a little Okudagram, you know, like warning label. And I've got it that framed in a box. So I've got a few things like that that I'll never sell. But
Grace said, though, is there anything you've heard that is out there that you're like, I don't know if that's legit or you would love to get your hands on? Or just as it comes?
Picard's fish. That's the one we all know.
Picard's is it like fish. Lionel or something like that?
Livingston. It was Livingston, named for David Livingston.
Ah,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Guys, really stumped me. I hate not to have this, like, a brilliantly wonderful, witty answer for you, but I can't if I wasn't thinking. I have a couple things from our show that actually sold.
We've done it, guys. We've stumped the guest.
STG. I tell you what, if something pops into my brain, I will. Well, you know, if I could get a hold of a screen used med scanner or McCoy Hypo from the 60s, that would be kind of amazing. Yeah. I'd never be able to afford it. But that would be
amazing. One of those black and chrome tricorders. That'd be sweet.
Yeah.
Well, I'm talking about the little Feinberger, the little med scanner rotate, because they were so much fun to use in our surgery.
And yeah.
I mean, I was always like, can I wear the smock? Can I have a, you know, it was like, I'm going to have a med scanner in my hand. While you're in sick bay, McCoy's not McCoy unless he's, even if he's just hand, it's like George Burns' cigar or something. It's just one of those things. Just got one of those things. Yeah. So there, that's the best thing. That would be like an ultimate, oh my God, puddle melting moment there. If I had a 60s Irving Feinberg original 60s hero prop of a med scanner or a hypo. How about that?
That is an acceptable answer.
Okay.
My curiosity is satisfied. We can all go home happy.
Okay, because I couldn't have it otherwise.
Before we go home, do you want to give out your links and like Facebooks, Twitters, websites so people know where to follow? And
The Trekland Trunk on Facebook and Twitter. But even more basic than that, just LarryNemechek.com or TreklandBlog.com. For the blog, and Larry Nemechek's Trekland on Facebook, and just at Larry Nemechek on Twitter, and the conofwrath.com on Facebook. So yeah, I've got some cons coming up. I should say real quickly. I'm gonna be at Away Mission Tampa in April. I just got invited to Midwest Media Expo in Detroit. I've never been to Detroit, and three or four of us from Continues are going to be there to screen Lolani, I think, but I'll have a regular table. And then my homies at SoonerCon in Oklahoma City in June, and BayouCon in Lake Charles, Louisiana, and then, you know, Vegas Trek and San Diego Comic-Con and Emerald City in Seattle.
Yeah.
And I'm probably leaving one out. Oh, Phoenix Comic-Con, I'm supposed to be there, probably will be. And here's the thing, guys. If you have any listeners up in the Northeast, I've never guested at a New York con or a New England con, and would love to get up there sometime. So, you know, buddy's
we'll
up that
ask
way
around.
And has some pull. Yeah, pull some strings or something. The South and the Midwest
with
and
our
the West,
vast
I got covered.
Web of influence as podcasters.
Don't underestimate the power of the inner tubes, you know? guys.
A
so
good
no
lesson.
That's kind of it. That's kind of all things from Trekland. And I'm working on a couple things, like I said, taking this time back, and hopefully can announce something by the end of the year. Another out-of-the-box thing that I'm going to do that's just kind of unique to everything that I've got on the table. So finally, that I've had people yelling at me that I should be doing. So I won't talk about it anymore, but hopefully we'll talk about that later. So
we'll have to get you back on to all things.
If
Trek.
There's anybody still awake
definitely.
Out there,
yeah.
That's,
we had a very active chat room. No worries about that.
Oh, okay. See, I had the chat. I always try to get into the chat room, and then I'll go back and look back. No, not somebody said chat. Chateau Labar. There you go. Oh,
Chateau Labar sounds like it would be pretty good too, though.
That would be the other one. Yes.
They make Coco No-Nos.
So, anyway, guys, I will let you to it. I just got my warning here that I need to be off.
Uh-oh.
But my friendly warning.
Thanks for joining us, and we'll definitely keep an eye on Trekland and all the good things.
Yeah. Guys,
thanks for having me on.
Yeah. It's been fun. Yeah. This has been great.
Been a blast.
Hope everybody enjoyed
thanks
it.
Thanks for joining us.
Okay. Well, let me know, and I'll put the, you know, the after effects. I'll make sure and put the talk about where that is too.
try to have you on again in the future because you have a lot of awesome upcoming projects. And thank you again very much for coming on. I think that'll be it for this week's show. This will be All Things Trek signing off.